Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
The sunshine bores the daylights out of me. All right, Patrick, we are here at Mike Wagner's house.
Yes, we are.
Mike Wagner's house. Mike Wagner, a great friend, and he decided he would let us in.
Yes, that was nice.
Yes.
Yeah, we kind of snuck up on him.
Yes. But. So it's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And we are here at Mike Wagner's house. Why?
We are here to do the Rolling Stones Top 15 Songs Countdown. We've done several others of these from time to time. The Who we did. And they're a lot of fun to do. We got the most votes we've ever gotten in a poll this time.
Oh, great.
And the most songs, different songs voted on. Because as Andy Tate says in his poll submission, the greatest band of all time has made so many great songs, it's so hard to choose.
True, true. Yes, a vast catalog of songs. It was hard for me to submit my own personal top 10. We'll get to that later.
Yep.
But it was really hard to narrow it down. So, as you mentioned, we've done countdowns in the past with listener polls. We did Led Zeppelin. Mm. We did Replacements. We did Beatles. We did The Who, David Bowie, Prince.
Prince. Forgot about that.
Christmas.
And we've done holiday songs, that's right, twice. So we asked people to submit their 10 favorite Rolling Stone songs. And then from that, we are going to do 15 of the favorites, right? Okay.
A week of countdowns.
Yeah, so you'll hear those all this week.
Yeah, by Friday, it's going to be pretty smelly in here with all of us sleeping over.
And part of the reason, why we're here at Mike Wagner's is because we wanted to, you know, have some friends as well and do this as a group effort. So hello, friends.
Yeah.
Listen to that.
There we go.
A live studio audience.
It's great. It's great. Thank you very much, Mike. Okay, so Rolling Stones, a big reason why we're doing the Rolling Stones right now is because they have new music out.
Yeah, they do.
It's getting, you know, good reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Well reviewed. I'm just going to play a little snippet here from one of the brand new tracks.
Okay.
This is not in the top 15, but just, you know, to kind of give you a sense of what they're doing right now. I believe, though, that somebody who is here right now, put this in his top 10. At least that's what he said, unless he was joking. Here we go. All right, that's Angry. That is one of the new Stones singles. Bud, you want to come up here and speak to that song? Because you mentioned the other night when we were out that you really like it a lot.
I do. It kind of brings back memories of the classic Rolling Stones songs. It's like they went back and listened to their own records and figured out, hey, this works. So
let's rip off these guys.
Exactly. And you can just see, if you think about the 80, like, Still Life tour, I think you can see, like, Mick in his football pants and his football jersey, like, strutting around singing Angry, and Keith's got the cigarette hanging out with those, you know, rocking those power chords, and they're all, you know, and Charlie's in the back kind of laughing at them all. So it was more for nostalgia more than anything.
Yes.
But it's still a fantastic song.
Great.
It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anybody expected this. Nobody expected this,
no,
right?
No, probably not.
Yeah.
And the new album is called Hackney
Diamonds.
Diamonds. Okay.
Yeah.
Shattered Glass or Hackney Diamonds.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Very cool. Mick has a newborn son he's got to support, so they got to put the album out.
There is that. All right, so Bud shows how it's done. If at any point anybody wants to come up and make a comment on any of the songs that we talk about, please do. And what we're really looking for, though, is like, you know, personal feelings about the songs, not so much like music history kind of stuff. But if you have something you want to say about any of these songs that made the countdown, that's the place to do it. And then when we get to Friday, because we're here all week, peoples, when we get to Friday, that'll be more of an open forum to talk about songs that did not make the countdown. All right. So should we unveil number 15?
Let's do it.
On the countdown? Here we go. Right, now, did anyone think that would be number 15?
No, I did not. No.
So there are 14 better songs, or songs that are better liked, I guess, among our group than Satisfaction.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So 1965, it was a number one hit song in the United States, their first number one. And of course, you know, one of the all-time classic rock and roll songs.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting to me because I read this somewhere that somebody said Keith wrote the riff like when he was asleep, or it was like he was dreaming and he woke up. But that always makes me think, like, what does Keith Richards dream about? Like, what could his dreams possibly be? You know, how weird could they possibly be? And I always found that, and also the line about how white your shirts could be, to be so, you know, like, gripping. And like, I remember the first time I heard that song thinking that. Enrique Cruz, on his ballot, Jim, interestingly, he said, I chose not to include Jumping Jack Flash or Satisfaction because they sound too similar to me in my mind.
Well, the opening riff is kind of inverted in Jumping Jack
Flash.
That to
be
it's kind of a similar thing. But I do think it, right off the bat, it shows the power of Keith and his the simple riffs he would write that are just so iconic and so like the basis of these great, you know, radio hits, right?
Yeah, absolutely. David Lee said the riff of all riffs is what he called the beginning of Satisfaction, or the riff in Satisfaction. So, I mean, there's an argument to be made there for sure.
Anybody want to address parentheses? I can't get no parentheses
right.
Satisfaction. Rob Gates is stepping up to the mic.
I will just make the comment that on usually the, you know, the most 100 top rock and roll songs of all time, it's either Satisfaction or Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah.
So once again, I think we're dealing with another Suburbs Pod knuckleball in terms of what the top 15 are going to be. So very excited to hear what the rest
are. It is interesting.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, Mike Snyder. By the way, Mike is keeping track of the Iowa State-Kansas game over there.
Just started. Kansas is driving. Iowa State was forced to punt.
Make sure you get a little closer.
A little closer?
Okay. Just if, periodically throughout the week, if you could give me score updates.
I'll do that. Okay. I'll do that.
Could be a long game, if you know
this
what I mean.
This was really tough. You know, too many events at one time. You know.
So. No, but I would appreciate that because, you know, we're on opposite sides of, of this contest.
Maybe we'll go to overtime or something.
That's right. All right.
I just wanted to say quickly, I think this... The song, I Can't Get No Satisfaction, I think doesn't get a lot of respect because it's just, we've heard it so many times. I know it's in my top 10. I'm like, well, I'm thankful that we didn't have to pick 1 through 10 and rank them because, you know, I wasn't sure where I would want to put that. But I think it just doesn't, we've heard it so many times, I think we take it for granted. That's all I would say.
That's probably true.
Good point.
I think to put yourself back, if you can think about when this came out in 65, right? It must have been a pretty revolutionary song, you think? It was
absolutely
different from other pop and rock songs of that era.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
I think feedback had only been heard on one or two records up to that point. So.
But I mean, most of you weren't born then. I was, but I wasn't cognizant.
I wasn't.
So we don't really remember what it was like to hear that the first time. I was hearing the Archies and the Jackson 5 before I probably heard this, I would guess, if I think back to my music history. So, but anyway, I'm glad it made it. I am surprised it was at 15. So.
Yep. Kevin Goff.
My only comment about this song is that it's a song I remember my dad knowing all the words to.
Oh.
And that stuck with me forever.
Interesting.
Like, I was like, why does he know all the words to this song? Because I couldn't name another song that he could actually sing. So.
Wow, that's pretty
cool. There's a lot of words in this song.
Hey, yeah. I know.
So that took some effort.
If you're going to choose one, that's a pretty good choice.
I thought, Kevin, you were going to come up here and talk about the fact that Devo covered this song.
They did, yeah. Yes. I remember that, but I don't have any comment because I don't really like it. But.
Okay. Very different. They did a very different take on it. All right. Number 14?
Number 14.
Rocks Off. That's the leadoff track from Exile on Main Street, 1972. Not a single, I don't believe.
I don't believe so.
A single. Okay.
Yeah.
But actually, spoiler alert, you're going to hear a few songs throughout the countdown that were not singles, which is amazing considering how many, you know, hit singles the Rolling Stones released. But but I think over time, this one has really become a fan favorite. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting, too, about the Stones that when they hit their classic period in, you know, 68, you know, through what, 73, 74, something like that. I mean, they're really considered classic middle period. It was also the time when the growth of album-oriented rock was really on the rise.
Yeah.
And they benefited, I think, tremendously from that. You know, many songs on their records would become pretty well known, even though they weren't necessarily singles, like you said. One voter, Steve Wade, makes an interesting point here. He says, Rocks Off and Rip This Joint should never be separated. There shouldn't be a band between the songs. He said they absolutely have to be one song to his mind. So I thought that was pretty interesting, too, the way they lead that album
off. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I got into this album when I was in college. I wasn't really familiar with Exile before then, and it was specifically because... Rolling Stone magazine would always rank it like really high, like number three or something like that, and like all time greatest albums. So I'm like, I got to check this out. And it has, I think only one, Exile really only has like one hit single.
Yep.
Two? What would be the other one? All Down the Line? Okay. Well, I'm not sure about that. But anyway, what I was going to say is, there's only one, when you look at the track listing, there's one that's like jumps out at you on Exile. And then, like, and it's a double album, and you're like, what is all this? How can this be so great? And you listen to it, and you realize why it's so great. But I had a friend who was already familiar with it, and he said, the two songs you really got to listen to are Rocks Off and Happy.
Ah.
Those are the ones, man. Yeah, so this is a great rock song.
Yeah, amazing.
And the horn's awesome. Everything about it's awesome.
Piano. Yeah, it just all works together.
Any comments from the gallery? Mike? Mike Wagner, everyone.
Okay, first off, we'll probably talk about this a lot tonight. Nicky Hopkins playing piano.
Yep.
If you listen to it, like he's a lot of these songs I bet come up today are going to have. This week. I'm sorry.
Yes.
We'll have Nicky Hopkins in there. And, of course, in the Exile period, they had Bobby Keys and Jim Price playing horns, which really added that song. Also, the middle eight. It's so mesmerized. That break is just awesome. And then when it kicks back in, I mean, it just that's kind of what takes the song from being a really good song to being like stratosphere level song.
Amazing. Yeah. And that they would have that kind of cool middle eight. And not even need to use it in another song because they're making a double album, which is kind of amazing, too. Yeah.
Also, one of my favorite lines, the sunshine bores the daylights out of me, right? I hear that line and I think Paul Westerberg probably learned something from listening to the Rolling Stones, right? Because that wordplay just sounds like stuff that he did throughout his songwriting career.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Number 13. You guys will recognize this one. Sympathy for the Devil off of Beggar's Banquet, 1968.
Yep.
Only went to number 55 is what I saw in the United States. Weird. So not necessarily a big hit single at the time.
Yeah.
But this is like synonymous with the Rolling Stones, right? Sympathy for the Devil.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And this, for me, is a classic case of misheard lyrics because I always thought it was the pilot washed his hands and sealed his fate. Like, I was like, I wonder what that was. Did they have an airplane pilot that was crazy one time? Or like, why did, some sort of anti-flying fear or something? It took me a while to really understand. It was actually my wife, a good Catholic, who pointed out to me that it wasn't really a pilot. It was a different guy.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it was a guy.
Yeah. One thing that's...
Did she shout out who killed the Kennedys?
She might have, yeah. Yes. That's right.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
My favorite book about the Rolling Stones is called The True Adventures of the Rolling Stones. It's written by Stanley Booth, and it's a great book. If anybody hasn't read it, I would highly recommend it. And he was with the Rolling Stones on their 1969 tour that culminated with Altamont, and he was right there on the side of the stage during the concert. And his theory is that Mick Jagger, loved playing sort of the Dark Prince kind of character. But after Altamont, Stanley Booth's theory is that he didn't really mean it anymore. But up until that point, he did. He really liked to, dabble in that kind of image and really liked to put that public perception out there. And he really believed in the power of it. But once he got there, Stanley Booth's theory is that he went across a line and he never went back across that line in the rest of his career, which I find very interesting.
Yeah.
And it's mainly because of this song.
It's very cool. The instrumentation, the arrangement's great.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of amazing for a band that only 3-4 years before this was doing blues covers.
Exactly. Hadn't even written their own songs. Yeah.
That's right. To show that kind of musical growth, I think is amazing. I was reading, though, that, I mean, part of the reason why this song even came together was because of rock and roll at that time and the image that the Stones had, that there were so many, you know, people who thought they were, you know, satanic in some way or whatever, mm-hmm. and hedonistic and all of that kind of stuff. And so it was like, well, then let's write a song from the point of view of the devil.
Yeah. Right? Let's, we'll take it all the way over there. Right. Yeah.
All right. Any sympathy for the devil fans out there? This one was in my top 10. Anyone?
So have you seen the documentary they did about the making of this? It was really a slow song. Mm. It was actually like, it's just like Mick on acoustic guitar. I mean, Brian Jones is gone.
Right.
And he's fried. But then again, Nicky Hopkins is doing the piano. And I think that's what turned it around and made it the song. Because like that's what, if you listen to it, that's what drives the song.
It does. It's understated, though.
It's actually Keith on bass, too. It's not Bill Wyman. It's Keith. I'm 99% sure. Something callers call in. Correct me if you like. And then there's also this great, and that same, we'll have to find it and post it or something. But there's this great, everybody sort of around the microphone doing the.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
It's like everybody in the studio, like Marianne Faithfull and the whole crowd, you know. So it's really, if you haven't seen it, it's worth finding
out.
That's
very cool. And that's a great point, Mike, that I don't know, the Stones don't get a lot of credit for like their background arrangements or their background singing, but they really have some great background singing throughout their entire catalog.
And this is also coming after they kind of sort of bombed with the previous album, the Satanic Majesties, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Request. And people thought that didn't work because they were maybe overly ambitious and they weren't able to pull off that kind of psychedelia kind of stuff.
Right.
But this is an ambitious song.
It very much is.
Maybe they reined it in to fit their strengths, but
I think you're right.
You know, you don't think of this as like sort of classic blues. It doesn't have that sort of feeling.
You're exactly right. Yeah. Yep. Great point.
Nick Scalera, everyone.
I just got, you said don't talk about history, but I can't let this one go.
No, it's okay.
Let it go. To me, this is the soundtrack to the end of the hippie dream, right? This is Altamont. This is Sympathy for the Devil. The Stones always had that air of menace about them. And they were marketed, going back 3 or 4 years, I mean, the Beatles were the nice guys and the Stones were the bad boys. And so they marketed this, and there's actually a scene in Gimme Shelter, the very famous documentary about Altamont, and there's this young crazed fan who's looking up at Mick Jagger. She's like, you devil, you know. And it's like, there was something about like the Stones were just like, they were the antithesis to the whole San Francisco scene. Like, they came in, they hired Hell's Angels, they did a concert in San Francisco, but look what happened. They got on stage, sang Sympathy for the Devil, and the 60s died. Which I just think is that perfect. You know, whether Mick wanted to flee from that later on,
right.
I'm sorry. But, like, I think that was always sort of part of their image, and they knew what they were doing. You write lyrics like that, you know what you're doing.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
I don't think it's, you know.
Absolutely.
And I think it's – and I kind of respect that because it's in opposition to sort of, like – because there's that whole idea of the sort of hippie's dream and peace and love, but there was always the undercurrent of violence that was written in 68, for crying out loud.
Right.
I mean, that was a terrible year.
That's
so
amazing.
So, anyway, just wanted to – bring that aspect up.
Great
and
point.
They wrote about that in a couple other songs too.
Yeah.
Exactly.
They didn't leave it right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool out, man. I'm telling you. Intern Sam is just
he showed up one day late.
He did.
Yeah.
He's gonna stick around all week.
Yeah.
I'll be here for the rest.
Okay. All right. So that's the first three songs on the top 15 countdown. So tomorrow we'll go 12, 11, and 10. All right. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.
But I mean, most of you weren't born then. I was, but I wasn't cognizant.